Pope Benedict XVI greeted thousands of pilgrims on an overcast Wednesday here in the Vatican for the customary weekly general audience, urging the faithful to reach out to the weakest and most vulnerable members of society, the sick. His appeal for the respect of the sanctity of human life in all its phases comes as the Church celebrates the 17th World Day for the Sick. The Pope said he would be praying for the world sick in a special Mass in St. Peter's Wednesday and would be meeting with many of them afterwards. Charles Collins tells us more.
Pope Benedict remarked on the World Day of the Sick during his weekly general audience. Speaking on the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes, the Holy Father said the Holy Virgin supports those who carry the daily cross of suffering in union with Christ. The Pope was speaking to over 8,000 people in the Paul VI Audience Hall. Last week, he concluded his special catechesis on St. Paul. This week, he returned to the great Christian writers of the Church, this time speaking about John Climacus.
John Climacus, whose name means ladder, was born around 575 and wrote an outstanding tract near Mount Sinai on the spiritual journey leading from renunciation of the world to perfection in love. The journey takes place in three stages. The first involves detachment from worldly goods in order to return to a state of gospel innocence and enter into a deeper communion with God. In the second phase, the soul engages in a spiritual battle with the passions by cultivating virtues corresponding to each. When purified, these passions can show us the way to God through self-denial and grace. In the third phase, John emphasizes the importance of discernment. We must examine every aspect of our behavior in order to ascertain our deepest motivations and reawaken a sense of the heart.
Pope Benedict says this leads to the tranquility of the soul, which prepares us to probe the depths of the divine mysteries.
The last rung of the ladder consists in faith, hope, and charity. John's account of charity includes eros, or human love, which points towards the nuptial union of the soul with God. May John's spiritual ladder remind all of us who share in the death and the resurrection of Christ through baptism that we are called to continual conversion and purification with the help of the Holy Spirit.
At the end of the audience, the Pope greeted bishops who have come to Rome for meetings sponsored by the San Egidio and Focolare movements. He told them he was happy they were becoming familiar with the works of the movements and hoped they would be able to carry the fruits of these days of prayer and reflection back to their homes.
The Vatican released the Pope's message for the World Day for the Sick last Saturday. You can find it on our Vatican Radio website. That's vaticanradio.org, or on the Holy See's official webpage at www.vatican.va. But let's take a moment now to hear some of the highlights of the Holy Father's message. Charles Collins has this report.
The World Day of the Sick falls each year on February 11th, the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. The Pope writes that this year's focus is on children. He speaks about the children suffering debilitating illnesses, many of which are incurable. He also draws attention to those injured in the world's conflicts and wars, as well as those suffering from hunger and deprivation due to migration. Pope Benedict says the Christian community cannot be indifferent in the face of such terrible situations and has the urgent duty to help. He also urges the local church to help families of sick children who are often in great need. He gives the example of a local Roman charity which provides a place to stay for the families of those being treated in the local children's hospital. He says the treatment of sick children is an eloquent example of treasuring the value of human life, especially of those who are weak and absolutely dependent on others. He says it's necessary to affirm the absolute and supreme dignity of every human being and proclaim the goodness of the gift of human life, even when that life is weak and shrouded in the mystery of suffering. I'm Charles Collins.
This year's message for the World Day of the Sick focuses on the well-being of children. We asked the head of the Vatican's Council for Healthcare, Cardinal Lozano Barragan, why children?
Because the child are the weak part of the society, especially the poorest. Many of them are sick, and we must take all our attention in order to heal them. Many times they are abandoned by the society, also by the governments, and there we find them in the streets, as a child of the streets, without any care. And we must put a special care of them because they are beloved of Christ.
While that focus is on the physical state of children, mostly in third world nations, what to say then about children in industrialized countries where illness can be of a different kind? Spiritual malaise.
Yes, it is a very actual illness. The illness of sadness, of abandon, of many children that are in his own houses without any attention of their parents because they are separated by the divorce, by the break of the family, or simple because the parents are always in work and they have no time to take care of the children. Therefore, it is the frustration and the depression for them. And there are also the very bad examples. A child had seen about 15,000 hours in television, and in the television they have more or less to 18,000 murders in the different shows of television. And this is not a very good school for them.
Cardinal Lozano Barragan is head of the Vatican's Council for Healthcare. Well, the Pope's message came as heated controversy raged all across the country here in Italy over the right to life or to death of a young woman who had been living in a vegetative state for the past 17 years. 38-year-old Eluana Englaro died Monday night, 4 days after doctors at an Italian clinic removed her feeding and hydration tubes. In a case that has dramatically divided Italian public opinion, in much the same way as the Terry Schiavo case divided the American public a few years back, an Italian court gave the family of Eluana the green light to remove the feeding tubes which had kept her alive. Vatican and church leaders spoke out strongly against the measure, and right-to-life groups across Italy and Europe gathered for prayer meetings and demonstrations calling for Eluana's right to life, however little of it there might be. One of the groups lobbying on behalf of coma victims is the British-based Lineker Center, a Catholic think tank for healthcare ethics. Emer McCarthy spoke to the director of the center, Dr. Helen Watts.
Father Federico Lombardi, the Vatican spokesman, said that the passing of Eluana Englaro has cast a shadow, really, around the whole debate that is currently ongoing in Italy and that was provoked by the case of Eluana Englaro on the right to life. But unfortunately, many people call it the right to die. Why has modern society, particularly in the Western world, become so very confused over something that should be so simple?
I think what we've forgotten is to value the presence of a human being. So the value of a human being can never be reduced to what that human being can do. The value of a human being is about what they are, you know, a living human individual who is a member of the human family.
Now, Helen, a lot of the people who supported Eluana's father's petition to have feeding and hydration stopped and to quote Beppe Englaro, Eluana's father, to accompany her to death as being the fact that this permanent vegetative state that Eluana was in was more or less a living death. Can we really define coma as a living death?
No, I don't think we can. Technically, this was different from coma in that Eluana was able to sleep and wake, whereas coma is a sleeping state. But in any case, I think we have to see a person as alive while that person's body is alive. Life is a bodily state, and if a person is still a living bodily whole, if a person is still able to engage in bodily activities, even if that person is still asleep, that person must be respected as a human being.
Because a lot of people would argue, and I am playing the devil's advocate here, a lot of people would argue that if someone is not able to feed and hydrate themselves, then they would die anyhow, and it's just the advances of modern science that keep them alive, and it's not really God's will in the first place. How do we therefore confront this argument?
Many people who are severely disabled would die if no one fed them, but that cannot be a reason to abandon them. Now, of course, we have to distinguish between methods of life support, which are very invasive, very expensive, very difficult, and very simple forms of basic care, such as tube feeding a person who is unable to feed him or herself. Now, I think if the motive is to make someone die, that is always very seriously wrong. And even if the motive is not to make someone die, you still have to ask, is that person being neglected, or are that person's basic needs being met?
Elwana was in a permanent vegetative state. At what point, for people in these conditions, at what point do you say it is right to feed and hydrate them? And at what point can doctors ethically and morally say it is not right?
Well, it's never right to stop feeding a person with the motive of making that person die. That is a kind of euthanasia. It's euthanasia by omission. So if that is the reason that you're stopping feeding, that is always morally wrong. Now, there are some rare situations where you can stop feeding a patient because they are very close to death and they can no longer absorb the food. So food feeding would just cause that person more problems. But this is not the case of Elwana. Elwana was not dying. She could benefit from feeding and she should have been fed, and she certainly should not have had feeding withdrawn with the aim of making her die.
And a warm thanks there to the director of the Lineker Center in Britain, Dr. Helen Watt.